You may go ahead. The recording has started, Mr. Gomez. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I wonder if we should go. Does it make sense for us to talk about Tim's the concern Tim communicated via the list on one of the actions we decided on last week, or would it be better to wait until Tim's on the call?
Excuse me, Tim Rosenthal joins.
Well, that takes care of that.
Well, welcome, Tim.
Hey, you're on.
Hi, Tim.
There's Olaf and Robert and Tom and Chuck and Mike. Yeah, I left out Mike. Are all on the call? Okay. It is being recorded. Hey, Tim, could you start us off? You had sent an email to expressing a concern about one of the things we kind of agreed on last week. So could you start us off with your thoughts there?
It was in regards to, I think there was a couple of thoughts. One was in regards to the sending of the FOA, and that it was kind of, there's kind of two parts there, and I felt like, well, the first part, actually requiring a losing registrar to send the FOA was one thing, requiring a response and return before they did anything was another, and that, in fact, the requiring of the FOA to at least be sent, but not necessarily waiting to take any action for a response, was something that the SAC had listed as a possibility or potential recommendation in their report when they were on the domain name hijacking. So I just thought that, you know, there's a possibility they're separating that out, that they don't. And I think that's the way the issue was sort of stated, was sort of an and-or. But yet it looked like we were only looking at it as if they were tied together and one would require the other.
And one of the concerns, going back, and you were a part of that, the original group, at least the side group that worked on the transfer policy. And one of the concerns I had communicated that if we require the existing registrar of record to respond, then that goes totally against what we were trying to avoid in the original policy. Now, do you agree with that? What are your thoughts on that regard? And then we'll come back to the and/or issue.
Yeah, I think requiring a response to that FOA would probably be going much further than what I think anybody.
Okay, good. So you're on the same page there. Okay.
Right.
Help me understand. How would you deal with this one then? Do you think that this is a explain again the what your understanding of this particular recommendation is then.
That it's actually two parts. One, that considering whether it should be that losing registrar should be required to at least send the FOA, and then the second part, which I think we all agree is probably going too far, and that's where the losing registrar would have to wait for a response. And that wouldn't just be the losing registrar, and that would change things like, you know, an automatic 5-day approval if nothing else is done. You know, you wouldn't be able to do that anymore. You'd have to wait for a response. That's going too far. So I think it's just that first part, whether or not an FOA should be required to be sent by the losing registrar. Basically, it's like a notice that we've received a transfer request. This is just to inform you, and you know, if this isn't appropriate, here's the actions you need to take to cancel this request.
But what if they don't send it then? What if the losing registrar doesn't? Maybe I'm missing something here.
Well, I think that's where that's where we'll get to, you know, question whether it would be a just what the practicality of it would be, et cetera, is how would we enforce that? Would we enforce that? You know, there's no requirement to wait to do anything. I think if we tried to add anything in there that would require some kind of wait or the kind of response, that would probably be an issue. So it would be one thing to say, you know, yeah, the losing registrar is required to send an FOA. Trying to enforce that's another, and I think the other aspect of that'll come up to be an issue if, when it's discussed, will be that if the FOA isn't sent, the transfer goes through, then how does that come into play in the dispute resolution process if the registrant claims that the name was never, that they never got that FOA? So it does add a lot of other little nuances and complications to the whole thing. And Chuck, I'm not necessarily saying that I think that should be the requirement. My main point was that we didn't dismiss it solely on the basis that it was tied to having to wait for a response by the losing registrar.
Got it. So
I think the FX recommendation was just that it should have to be sent. So maybe it's a matter of, you know, this is a strong recommendation that it be sent or something.
Help me understand, what does it mean then? And let's forget about the one part that we know would go against the original intent, but what does it mean that it's required that the registrar of record would send an FOA? Isn't the FOA sent by the registrar that's initiating the transfer first? Are we suggesting that another FOA be sent by the registrar of record?
And maybe FOA is a bad term or a bad choice of words for that. It wouldn't be really a form of authorization because we're not requiring any response. So it would just be, you know, more of a notice.
That they receive it? That they receive notice?
The losing registrar would be required to send notice that the transfer has been requested with, you know, if this isn't the case, here's how to contact us or here's how to cancel the transfer.
Okay, so this is requiring then a response from the registrar of record that they've received notice of a transfer request. And they have received a copy of an FOA from the...
No. This is the losing registrar sending a notice to the registrant they have on record of that domain name, that they've received a request to transfer that domain name away.
Oh, okay. Now, thank you. I'm sorry for being so thick-headed here, but that's what this thing is saying. So it's actually... The losing registrar, the registrar of record, is required to send notice to the registrant or admin contact or both, whatever applies, that a transfer request has happened. Is that right?
Right. I think yes. Yeah, exactly. And I think the FX thinking is that, you know, it would help in cases where, you know, a rogue registrar or a non-compliant registrar is requesting a transfer request without getting the appropriate form of authorization, or perhaps they didn't get the authorization from the appropriate party or whatever.
Yeah. This is my.
So in the case of a rogue registrar, though, it'd be very hard to enforce this, huh? I mean, it sounds like a good idea. How would we make sure it happens?
Exactly. I mean, that's where I think the issue is going to come up, is we can say that, but how do you make sure it happens? What kind of issues does it raise in the dispute process later?
I suppose it could be handled on a reactive basis if a registrant, you know, through some means complained later, I'm not sure who they complained to, that they never received notice of a transfer request. But even then, it would be, I'm not sure how that would be handled.
Eli, I've got a process question for you.
This is starting to sound like we're actually doing the policy work rather than trying to pick the policy things that we're going to work on.
Well, yeah, but keep in mind, Mike, that what the idea is, let's not spend a lot of time doing policy work if it doesn't look like it's very feasible. And that's
well,
what we're trying to look for right now.
Is it to be concluded that we should reconsider, this just eliminating 15 and see to some phrasing of the beginning of it and still keep it? Is that...
Yeah, I think that's what the question that Tim raised, and that it's healthy for us to have that discussion right now and come to some sort of decision.
Well, if you actually ask me, that's something, if I understand the policy correctly, the registrar can already implement if he's a good registrar who's caring for his customers. I don't see any reason why we should impose that on every registrar, no matter whether he wants to do it or not. If he doesn't want to do it, he probably won't, and it's hard to kind of figure out whether he does it or not, and I don't see what good it will do him, right? So I guess it's really just a discretion of the registrar whether he wants to protect his customers in a better way or not. I don't see a reason why we have to, in some way, put that into policy and regulate it.
Well, I'm gonna lobby from the registrant point of view that not having something like this embedded somewhere in policy makes me really nervous, because it seems like this opens up. I mean, one of the reasons, Chuck, that I've never left Network Solutions with my domains, because I've always been nervous about the transfer process and that moment of uncontrolled domain between the two registrars. And something like this would cheer me up a bit, because it would give me sort of a little bit more of a positive sense that I could stop a rogue registrar. Not that.
The problem is, Mike, is that the rogue registrar isn't going to send it to you.
Right, but at least then there's.
Well, the gaming rogue registrar wouldn't, but if you're your legitimate registrar that you might be with would, like Tom was saying, would certainly. Probably even now, certainly does. You know, GoDaddy always sends one out.
Yeah.
Because of that fact that we're not allowed in any way, to verify that the registrar on the other end has actually done their job. We're just supposed to assume they have.
Right.
That's the default assumption.
I don't see any reason of making it mandatory. I mean, there's a competition out there in the space, and if you don't feel comfortable with a registrar who's not supplying that kind of safeguards, I would change over to another registrar.
Yeah,
and that's free decision. So it's not something that has to be hard-handed regulated by some entity. That is regulated by the market itself, I guess.
Well, again, I think we're starting to make policy rather than choose which policies to make. But the other thing is that I think that presumes a more sophisticated registrant than in many cases there.
Maybe what we ought to do here is leave part of 15 in, the part that we're talking about, for being part of this group of a PDP. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And it might even make sense to add a comment to it that we discussed the issues about enforcing that, and that, maybe there's even another way to look at it is that it's an advisory or a strong recommendation given to registrars or something of that nature.
Yeah, that's a good idea, I think, adding a comment that says something like you just said, which is basically, we recognize that this might be pretty tough to enforce, but there could be value, like Mike said, in turn from at least a registrant view of the situation. So.
Okay, so nevertheless, it's a very technical thing, so whether we send it out or not. So would we leave it in group A, or the first group?
Well, this is, again, where I think that, as with many of these, there are sort of technical facets and policy facets.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
That we might consider splitting them.
Well, all of ones in group A have both. So there's no just one thing or another. So we can, you know, we can single them out all together, you know, then we have 16 PDPs and we can group them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an, you know, like considering whether it's a must or not is a very low-hanging fruit.
So then what I'm hearing that there seems to be consensus on is that we modify, we keep part of 15, basically. We get rid of the part that is requiring the existing registrar to respond back, but we keep the part about, and I don't think it should say, well, yeah, it's just okay to send the FOA, but it should say send an FOA to the registrant, right? Registrant or admin contact.
And maybe that's the terminology issue. I think that from the registrant perspective, what would be very helpful is if the losing registrar let me know, hey, your domain name's leaving. Is that
right? And that's what I was getting at there.
I think that's what 15 is trying to get at. And it may be that the use of the term FOA is what's goofing things up.
Well, FOA is okay as long as I didn't understand that the FOA that they're talking about there is going to the registrant or admin contact. That's the crucial piece of information for me that I think needs to be in there.
Well, it is in there.
And I think it's termed FOA because there's an actual form of authorization defined or approved by ICANN. If you're going to do it, you have to use a certain form so that you're not further confusing the situation or whatever. It's similar to the...
Right, Now, I don't see where that's in there, Mike. Where do you see that's in there? That it's going to the registrant or admin contact?
Well, it's called transfer contact in 15, which is... I'm assuming sort of a blurring of...
Yeah, but that's the part of this that we're eliminating.
Well, but if we changed that to...
It's okay to... and besides, the registrant doesn't have a transfer contract. Transfer contact is a contract for the registrar.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then maybe we can clarify this to...
That's what I'm suggesting, is that we make that clear.
That's delightful. I love that.
So... Okay. We make it clear. We say the registrant there instead.
Registrant or registrant contact, because in some cases it might be the admin contact or whatever.
Yeah, we don't have the registrant for most of the time.
The losing registrar doesn't? Sure you do.
Well, it depends. Some registrars might have, some not, depending on the reseller chain and stuff like that.
It's better to cover both bases.
Yeah, you can certainly turn it to the registrant, and that is the registrant is always overriding the admin fee. But for a lot of cases, you can't figure out the registrant, so you have to go with the admin fee because that's the one that is in the Whois database.
Yeah, and then we use the phrase registrant contact.
Registrant or contact.
No, or admin fee.
Excuse me?
Or admin fee. I mean, we have to stick with the terminology that we already have.
That's fine.
Is nothing like a registrant contact.
Yeah, I agree.
There's a registrant that might have an email address.
Right, that's why I didn't like what Olaf said. Right.
And we have an admin fee that definitely has an email address. So we can use both if we have it. But if we just have one of it, we should use that one. And that's the only thing we're sure of is the admin fee.
Okay, and what do we do with the second part of it after the comma?
We throw that out.
Okay.
We put it in the. Excuse me, that was wrong.
No, we
put it in the this new category we're creating where we're not recommending work be done on that, but there still can be discussion on it if they want.
Well, and this is where, as a registrant, I'd lobby that we leave it in. And
the problem with that, Mike, is that and Tim and Tom can attest to this. When the original work was done on the policy, this was a key this goes against a fundamental decision in the policy that was developed. The problem was historically, and Tim and Tom can talk to this better than I can, but the problem was is that that provides an opportunity for the existing registrar to just not respond and totally block transfers. And so your concern for the registrant then, that doesn't work in that favor because it makes it very easy for a rogue registrar that doesn't want names to be transferred, let's just not respond, and so nothing will happen.
But in this case, is it the registrar that's doing this responding, or is it the registrant? The way I read this was that registrar, the losing registrar, had to send the FOA to the registrant.
Right.
And had to wait for a response from the registrant before acknowledging transfer. That's the way I read 15.
That's correct. But still, you know, with what Jack claims is totally true, as we designed the system, we were asking the question whether that should be an auto-ACK or an auto-NACK system. What you're describing is basically an auto-NACK system.
Right.
So if there's no confirmation giving back, it's NACKed. That was decided back in the time that that would be not the appropriate way because there are more intended transfers than unintended transfers.
Yeah.
And what you kind of suggest is that we would reopen that whole debate, and this is to enhance the current policy, not to change the current policy.
I get that. So here's a question. Is there another piece of this file of 19 suggested policies that we could use to accomplish the same thing? Because I certainly understand what you're saying and support that. The thing that I'm wanting to get in front of the group is any ways that we can sort of protect the registrants in the process that we're proposing. Certainly I understand, Tom, what you just said. That makes
sense. And I think that gets a part of the way, or kind of peripherally anyway, into the other issue that I raised about combining 5 and 6. So maybe I can, when we're ready to go there, I can explain that a little bit.
Well, I get Tom's explanation, and I should have gotten Chuck's, but sorry, Chuck, it took Tom.
All right.
So I told you
that Tom and Tim would be able to explain it better than me.
So I'm willing to go with that. I'm not sure that having done that, we really have anything left with 15, however. And then I start to get back to, do we really need it at all? Because isn't there already something in place that the registrar of record lets the registrant know that there's a transfer?
Well, now you're getting back to the issue of enforcement. That was what we were talking about, is we can leave that in there, the part that we left in, but it's
probably only
impossible or near impossible to really enforce it. So it's there as, and I thought that's what you were saying, that it'd still make you feel more comfortable. But
I think that what happens for me, because, and this is one of the drawbacks of having a sort of a clueless registrant in the conversation, is that I sometimes say things because I don't understand the process well enough to know that I'm saying something stupid. And
would it be helpful to have either Tim or Tom kind of walk through the way a transfer happens?
No, I don't want to soak up all your time with that.
They could probably do that fairly briefly.
Well, I mean, I've done a couple of transfers. The thing that I guess the enforcement part of this I also get as problematic. And that being the case, and that's where I get to the, maybe this isn't the vehicle to use to derive the protections for the registrant that I'm really after. Because I don't want to pick a method that's going to completely goof up the back office processes that you guys have to support. That's certainly not my intent.
So are we back to maybe eliminating all of 15? I'm curious. I don't have a strong position one way or the other, but what I heard you said, Mike, is that maybe there isn't any value left.
I think that if it turns out that the ACNAC issue really doesn't work, then just sending out the notification, let's say...
This is Tim. I think there's certainly value in sending out the notification. I think the question is whether it makes any sense to try to require it. My feeling is that if we leave it in and maybe recommend that just notice enforcement is an issue, that perhaps this is just this should just be become part of an advisory or a recommendation to registrars, but not a requirement. And then, and because I think it's been raised by registrars as a concern, and it's been raised by the ESSAC as a concern, and so at least addressing it to that degree, it seemed to me to make some sense. And it certainly does have value to the registrant if registrars will do it.
Why don't we leave it in, and then it can become part of the PDP?
Which one? The second part?
The first part.
Oh, we could leave the first part, then we can...
Just the first part. We eliminated the other part.
The first part I'm totally fine with.
A comment that this is, we're dealing with the first part, and this is rather an advisory, and the FOA should be sent to the registrant or admin contact.
Well, we don't really have to have any advice. Well, we don't have to give advice. We just have to decide whether it goes into a PDP or not.
Okay. Yeah, but now the phrasing of it. Or should we keep the phrasing as it is then?
I would just kind of really take out the...
Chop off everything that comes after the comma.
Yeah.
And make sure that the FOA is going to the registrant or contact or admin contact.
Okay, so add that little text. Okay.
Yeah.
I think I can manage that.
And for the clueless among us, that would be me, if there could be a reference to the policy discussion that the second half invalidates as we explain why we're dropping the second half, that would be helpful, because then I could go off and read that and not waste your guys' time.
Ooh.
Is that, I'm assuming that somewhere there's a document that sort of describes the ACNAC discussion that we just referred to.
Yeah,
right?
And that largely precedes me, and I'm not sure if I can dig that up in a short period of time.
We probably could ask Tina. She ran that whole show like 4 or 5 years back.
One of the problems is that that whole process took a couple of years,
yeah.
It was very contentious for a long time. So maybe there's some stuff there. I'm not sure it's just referring to the policy. I guess the policy itself wouldn't show the debate that occurred there.
I'm not sure I need to read the debate. I was just thinking that I'm thinking that if one of my fellow registrants said, "Hey, Mikey, how come you got rid of that? That was totally cool." I'd love to be able to say, "Well, because of this." I'd love to have something to point to that says, "Look, folks, was totally cool, but
the simple answer is that would allow existing registrars to easily block transfers, including from registrants who really wanted transfers.
Olaf, could you capture that sentiment? That's probably enough.
Did I say that right, Tim and Tom? Please keep me honest.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I think that's very helpful.
I'll try to capture that.
Terrific. Thanks. Sorry to be such a clueless newbie.
I mean, there was a lot of time we spent talking about that particular concern because there was lots of criticism that some registrars were doing that.
And the other side of that, of course, is quite devastating, which is rogue receiving registrar hijacks domain, domain registrant has no way to stop the process, doesn't get notified, has no way to NAC. What's the process that protects the registrant from that scenario today?
Actually, it's luck. I mean, that's the way it's implemented with most of the registrars, that the registrant itself can choose whether his domain name is open for transfer at all or not.
Oh, you said lock, not luck. I'm sorry.
No, luck. I'm sorry for that one.
Well, it's not related. No.
Yeah. Depending on the registrant, it actually is.
We can just stop our work, and let's just go with luck.
I was an Irish guy. I'm for it, but I'm sorry. I beg your pardon.
To use a decision-making machine, the coin, flip side or the other side. Yeah?
Did we go to 5 and 6 now?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, guys.
Jim, you want to jump in again?
Yeah. I just had some concerns about trying to combine these because, you know, I see what you're saying about 6 and 5 looking like they're related, but I think with six, the main issue there is just time limiting the SOAs, and I think that's pretty much low-hanging fruit. I can't imagine that becoming a big issue. It certainly makes some sense that there's some kind of reasonable limit. You can't, you know, hang on to one for a year and then try to, you know, run it through to get a transfer done. But the reason that the lock comes into play isn't just because that's not really the only reason that a transfer gets denied. I mean, there could be other reasons, and so I think 6 kind of stands on its own. For whatever reason a transfer is denied, there should still be some time limit associated with how long an FOA can be kept without having to renew it or you know, reauthorize that transfer. But 5, dealing with the lock, I think just given some conversations with different registrars, I think that could be a little bit bigger can of worms than what we might think it could be, just because there's so many different things going on right now with lock, and I think, you know, spending time trying to look at all those and trying to decide, you know, just exactly how we could word some kind of limitation or reasonable access kind of thing might be more complicated than we thought. For example, one of the things that I know, you know, we have, you know, we mentioned in our response to the overall transfer issues in our statement, one of the views that GoDaddy expressed was that the ability to allow the registrar to select a more secure method of unlocking a name. So, in other words, you know, and if they choose to become a part of some system or value-added service or whatever that the registrar offers, you know, the registrant should be able to opt into a process where unlocking that name is more difficult than what it might be to get them, you know, to do other things, to, you know, change their name servers or whatever it might be. That the registrar should have that option. So I think just given some of those kinds of things, I think the lock could be a bigger issue, and then it would just bog down 6, which should be kind of a pretty easy, in my estimation, something pretty easy to deal with.
So your suggestion, Tim, is to separate 5 out, to isolate it as a big, maybe a PDP in and of itself, and just leave 6 in this group? Is that what your suggestion is?
Well, at the very least, you know, not to combine them, as I think had been suggested.
Okay.
But I think, in line with other issues where we have tried to single out those who are bigger and chewier, I think that seems logical then to keep 6 as easily done, low-hanging fruit and part of group, the first group, and indicate that 5 would rather be worthy of a PDP on its own.
Or at least part of a more substantial PDP. There may be others that go in with that.
Well, keep in mind that I think it's okay to have items in here that require more substantial work.
unless the group thinks that this one with all the rest would just be too much. Is that what you're thinking, Tim, is that maybe including this with these others would be too much?
I think that's a possibility, yeah.
Okay.
All right. I think I got that.
So for right now, we'll isolate 5 and take it out of this group.
And this group that we're talking about is sort of the low-hanging fruit group, right?
No, not that really. That, I think, was what Tom designed it as. Tom, you want to talk to that?
Sorry. I was just
taking a short vacation.
What exactly are we talking about?
Tom, you weren't so group one. Your first group wasn't intended to just be low hanging fruit, was it?
No, absolutely not. I was just trying to combine things that are in essence something that have like technical operational that are operational issues actually. So the other group I came up with was actually things that were more around the transfer dispute policy, meaning how you resolve once a transfer has been gone through and all the problems that go along with it. If some people claim that it might not be shouldn't have been transferred.
Right.
So should we call this group operational transfer policy issues?
That is what I actually write to the current operational rules of the transfer policy.
Okay, and that's what you said. So,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
And some of them are low-hanging fruit, and some of them are not. So.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Anything else on this operational rules group?
Now, that being the case, it seems like we could leave 5 and 6 in it and then somehow designate 6 to be low-hanging fruit and 5 being one that's probably going to need more work.
Right. But sort of decouple the two.
Yeah.
Let me make a process suggestion here. Let's go ahead and isolate 5 for right now. I think what we're going to have to do, once we kind of finish going through all of these and adjusting groups and doing things, we're going to have to come back and take a look at the total picture. And that might be the best time to decide, yeah, let's put it back in there or let's keep it isolated. Does that make sense?
That's fine with me.
Because I think until we look at the total picture, once we've gone through everything, it's going to be a lot easier then to make decisions like whether we put it back in or not than it is right now, I think.
Yeah, I think it's probably good to do
that. Yeah, I'm good with that.
Yep. Good plan.
Okay. So we'll isolate it right now, and then we're going to come back and take a look at the total picture. I know that'll be a lot easier for me once I see everything we've done all in one place. So does that take care of the operational rules group?
There are a bunch that we didn't talk about the last time that could probably get dropped into that bucket.
Didn't we go through the ones that Tom had suggested, though? That doesn't mean we can't move other ones back into this group.
I don't remember
where we left off last time. Well, where did we leave off last time?
We managed to cover everything up to 18, meaning to the next chapter in Tom's listing, the enhancement of the current transfer dispute policy.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Well, and then those we haven't addressed, and God knows there may be some that we should be shuffled into some other category, but we haven't really talked about anything past 18 in his paper.
And so, Mike, what were you suggesting?
I was thinking that maybe we were ready to carry on past 18 and start dropping to et cetera, et cetera.
I thought that was the case.
Yeah, and that some of those could easily also be added to this operational slump.
That's absolutely true.
That's all I was saying.
We're not saying that the first group is closed.
Oh, right.
We're just saying that we've covered those for now.
Yeah. I think we're agreeing.
Okay, good. All right. So we're on number 2?
Yep.
whether a process for urgent return resolution of a domain name should be developed as discussed within the SX hijacking report. Now this is one of those that I had commented, I thought, which was somewhat related to 7.
I think that's
which
right.
We have in the operational group.
I think we took that out, didn't we?
Yeah, I thought we did.
Didn't we take 7 and 2 out into a separate group?
We actually did, yes.
So why
don't have
would
to
it make sense?
Correlated and have feasible technical aspects, but also much more difficult policy aspects, deserving thorough investigation and separate handling. Conclusion: to combine the technical aspects of 7 and 2 and keep them in the first group, while combining the policy aspects of both as a separate potential PDP.
Yeah.
That was my little condensed version of our discussion last time.
Yeah, so we are with 4.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, just a second. I'm sorry for being slow. So we're leaving, are we isolating 2 and 7 as totally separate or just parts of them?
Parts of them are in group 1. The technical parts are in group 1 from both 2 and 7, while the policy aspects are big enough to deserve a PDP on their own.
Okay, very good. Anybody opposed to that? Is that good?
That's
I'm okay with that now that I understand it.
That's fine.
Sounds good.
That then does bring us to 4. Whether reporting requirements for registries and dispute providers should be developed in order to make precedent and trend information available to the community and allow reference to past cases and dispute submissions. You saw my concern that I expressed there. We'd certainly have to, if there's a policy effort on this, it would certainly have to deal with proprietary data, and that's why I wonder how feasible that one really is.
From the registrant sort of shopper point of view, though, it's with or without proprietary data. Even if we could, if we could figure out a way to get past that barrier, Chuck, it would be hugely useful for a customer, I think, to be able to compare. Because if we go back to the discussion we had earlier where we say, gosh, you know, maybe you want to change registrars, it's awfully hard to know how the registrars perform without some sort of eventually concern.
Yeah, but if you're asking us to, as a registry now, I'm speaking as a registry, you're asking us to share information about our customers in terms of how they did on disputes, that's proprietary data. We don't share information about our customers unless they can share it. But as a registry, we have a non-disclosure agreement with them that we honor very rigorously. So I'm not going to tell you that Sloan or 1&1, lost this transfer dispute.
And I think that may be part of the nub of a really tasty policy discussion.
Well, isn't that what is being asked for here?
Yeah. And you know,
you're asking that registries report which registrars won and lost disputes?
Yeah.
Could I in some way compare it to the UDRP filing so that the UDRP, once there's a decision, that is shown to the public?
Well,
I mean,
yeah. Let me ask.
Unlike provision, basically.
Let me ask you, Tom, and you, Tim. How do you feel about registries providing that kind of information? You okay with that? Do you think the registrar constituency is okay?
The problem I have with it is that, you know, it would it really be reflective of anything valuable without a lot of other information with it?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I mean, GoDaddy's a pretty big registrar. We have a lot of transfers going on. And so, you know, it's possible that, you know, there's some volume of disputes that goes one way or another. It's going to look a lot bigger. But you can compare to other registrars, but then in comparison to the volume, the size of the registrar, et cetera, you know, I mean, there's a lot of other little pieces of information that really put any of that data in perspective. I would be concerned that we didn't miss guide by having, you know, too truncated a set of data that couldn't really be properly evaluated.
But suppose that we did figure that out in the policy process and made it percentages rather than absolute numbers and made sure that the right data was there.
So you're talking about percentages and even absolute numbers. Another point I made in my comments on this was that we're seeing one or two transfer disputes a month, and that's for common net. So this whole effort here seems to be an awful lot for very little activity that's going on. So it'd be a lot of work, and not sure there's enough value to even warrant it.
Well, but I think part of the reason there's not a whole lot of activity is because, and this is another registrant sort of perspective, it's not very easy for a registrant to initiate those right now.
And as you know, I'm one of those that's not sure how that could even be implemented.
Right, but I think you have circular logic there. I think the reason you don't have much activity
well, that's
is
possible.
Really hard to initiate.
No, I understand your point.
That could be. I think part of it might too be, and just given my experience here, is that we try to work those things out between us and the other registrar to the extent possible, and
right.
And the vast majority of the times we're successful in resolving that between ourselves.
Which is good.
It's much easier, it's cleaner, and it's better for the registrant.
So if we change this what if we changed the focus of this from registry to registrar? That whether reporting requirements for registrar and dispute providers should be developed. Because maybe, A, you see more activity, and B, you're closer to the process. I don't think from a registrant perspective we care where the data comes from. It's really just getting the sunlight on the activity that's about.
Isn't it so? I mean, thinking aloud here, Olof, that, well, when you go buy a car, well, you check out sort of there are plenty of advice. These are good ones at that, and there are plenty of consumer associations which do the ranking of cars. I mean, there's none that really does that with registrars. And isn't that what you're looking for, actually?
Yeah. That's sort of the nose of the camel end of the tent, for sure. And I
think with this particular one, what happens is, maybe that's a valid thing in regards to other aspects, but with transfer disputes like this, what happens is the registrant, will call up their registrar with their complaint, and then the registrar will investigate, and, then that starts a process where they may be discussing it with another registrar, and we resolve the thing and try to work it out as best we can. So there's really no, it's not like a formal process for, that's recorded and that there's data being tracked and all of that. And I'm not sure how we'd even make sure that was done, just given the sort of, informal way in which it's usually initiated.
I think that's the some of the best practices kinds of facets of this pile of 19 things. I think that these kind of go together. That from the registrant perspective, it would be neat if that informal process could be routinized somewhat, and then once that's happened, that makes it possible for data like this to get collected. I agree that if the processes are all different and informal, then the one we're talking about now, number four, is very hard to implement because you're comparing apples to oranges.
Well, actually,
it could have the opposite effect of what you think of what you want it to have, though. I mean, as soon as you start formalizing it and it's data and it's tracked, and then all of a sudden everybody's covering their butts and.
Yeah.
Doing everything by the book, and then things don't always work out quite as smoothly, quickly, or in the right direction, because everybody's going to just make sure that the letter of the law, so to speak, is being followed, regardless of what might seem just at the time. And that's where registrars have a little bit of leeway at this point, is to say, oh look, we'll just
let the transfer go back, and, you know, we're not going to get into any protracted dispute over it. And then things get resolved for the registrant pretty quickly. But as soon as you start formalizing it, some of that leeway is going to disappear.
Yeah, well, we're just about out of time. I'm not opposed to leaving this for additional policy work. I personally think it's certainly not a low-hanging fruit, not that it has to be. I think it's a pretty tough one to do, but what's the consensus of the group? Should we just leave it on there as additional policy work?
Well, the problem is that we have to kind of come up with it's feasible or not. I personally think it is feasible. Whether it makes sense, it might be a totally different question. But it is feasible, and since we're not making any policy in that group, I would leave it on the list.
Anybody opposed to that?
Good for me.
Okay, good. You know, I know I've got to cut out for another meeting right now. Can we break here? And then I don't think we should even try to have a call until after the ICANN meeting. Would this same time work, what does that mean, 2 weeks from now, or is it 3 weeks from now?
It's 2 weeks from now. So Wednesday 20th of February. Is that what we're aiming for?
I think so. Change it, but does that work for people?
I'm, as a former resident of India and a person who's traveled to India and come back several dozen times, I wouldn't try and meet next on that schedule. I'd give yourselves another week. You're all going to be completely wiped out.
So you think we should go to the 27th?
Yeah. I believe me, that journey makes the...
Actually, I'm not available on the 20th anyway, now that I look at my calendar, so... Not that I have to be there, but...
I think it's good to have us continue this group. How about...
Shoot for the 27th?
Yeah, 27th, I think, would work a lot better.
Okay. I'm with...
That works for me,
sir. I won. I don't know what that really implies for me. I mean, 16 hours UTC. Is that doable from Taiwan?
You're not in as bad shape, Olaf. It's the kids in the North American zone that are going to be just falling over dead.
Okay, then I'm happy.
I'm glad to help. Same time?
Yeah, well, for now. We can always change it on our list, but I think that's a plan forward. So I think we made some more progress, so we'll keep plugging, guys. Thanks.
Great.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks a lot for being our record keeper.
Okay. There'll be some succinct comments on the list shortly, or when I come to New Delhi, depending on. Right?
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah,
okay.
Because
okay.
I'm leaving
thanks.
Tomorrow. Okay. Bye bye.
Thanks.
Bye bye.